Thanks so much for listening to this special podcast. The recording you're about to hear is not perfect, but we feel like the content is so good it's worth you straining your ears on occasion to hear what went on. This is part of a panel that I had the honor of hosting. It was called The Key Role of Community Health Workers in Integrated Care Delivery Systems, and it was part of a pre-meeting that Partners in Health hosted prior to the Global Conference on Primary Care in Astana, Kazakhstan, October 2018. Now, some of you might notice that 2018 is when we marked the 40-year anniversary of the Alma-Ata Declaration. It was a historically important moment back then, and it was incredible to be there at the 40-year mark, seeing the progress we've made and how far we've yet to go. The panel was incredible. It included Magnus Conte, the executive director of the Community Health Academy, Ruth Tarr, a community health assistant from Liberia, Alisford Wia, the director of community health services with the Ministry of Health in Liberia, and Diana Nusubuga, the deputy country director of community health partnerships with Living Goods in Uganda. The conversation got really heated, and there was even some important insights from the Honorable Wilhelmina Jala, the Minister of Health in Liberia, and Jim Campbell, the Director of the Health Workforce Department in the WHO. We hope that you enjoy the conversation. It included insights from the front line of community health to ideas about how a country can best support this work at the front lines, and then also a larger understanding of how the international community is considering the future of community health and community health workers. Thank you and enjoy. Thank you to everyone for coming to this special breakout session on community health. Before we formally start, it wouldn't be a community health worker panel unless we did a community health worker energizers. If some of you have worked with community health workers, you know that this is an important part of community health, right? So we're not going to do anything too weird, I promise them. So this is the way that this is going to work. When I clap once, you clap once. All right, you're going to have to do better than that. On time here, on time. When I clap once, you clap once. Good. When I clap twice, you don't clap. I clap once, you clap once. I clap twice, you don't clap. Okay, let's try it. You get an A+ for enthusiasm. So, are you a little bit awake?
Yeah.
Excellent. That's what we were hoping for. All right, so thank you very much to everyone for joining this group. This is the Global Conference, the PIH pre-section, Health Systems on Delivery Strategies to Achieve UHC, before the Global Conference on Primary Healthcare, 40th anniversary of the Alma-Ata Declaration. And this session is the key role of community health workers in integrated care delivery systems. My name is Dan Palazuelos. I'm the Director for Community Health Systems at Partners in Health, and I have the wonderful honor to host this incredible panel to talk to you about community health systems. One thing that you're going to notice is that the giant jumbotron is not on. And the reason why is because we want this to be more of a discussion, less presentation. Each panelist will have an opportunity to talk, but really we want you guys to ask questions and for us to get into a good facilitated conversation. One other thing is that you'll notice that there's a microphone there on that front table. This is being recorded for a roundtable discussion that will ultimately be put on chwcentral.org, and you'll be able to hear it yet again and enjoy it in all of its glory. So just to give you a heads up for whatever questions you asked. I want to say a word just to introduce you to the panelists, and then we'll have them each speak a little bit to start off the conversation. First, Magnus Conte. Magnus is originally from Sierra Leone. He was trained as a mental health nurse in the UK, and then ultimately worked in the NHS in the UK and Ireland in care delivery and education, then went on to health policy management at World Vision Ireland, is now the executive director of the Community Health Academy, and he'll talk more about his work now. Going down the line, Alisford Wia, originally from southeast counties of Liberia, trained as a physician's assistant, as a PA,
worked for many years, was ultimately promoted to the level of supervisor, then became the director of community health at the county level, and then director of community health services at the national level. So he'll be able to give us perspectives on multiple layers throughout the Liberian health system. Going down the line, Ruth Tarr is also from Liberia, specifically Boga. She has long been active in her community, specifically in primary school. She was very much involved in a girls' health club. This gained considerable trust in her community, and she was ultimately nominated to become a community health volunteer. When Liberia launched an ambitious national community health program, she became a community health assistant, which is their national community health worker cadre. And then finally, at the end of the table there, is Diana Nusubuga. So Diana, originally from Uganda, originally trained in public health, worked in public health programming in 10 different African countries with a group called Partners in Population Development Africa Regional Office. She then worked with the Global Health Corps and is now the Deputy Country Director for Living Goods. So this is a very special panel. We have people who work all the way from the front lines of community health to the national level, to then connecting a national experience with an international dialogue around community health. And then we have somebody who has experience across multiple countries in more of the same. So as you start to think of your questions that you're going to ask them, let's start with Magnus. Tell us a little bit about your work and what you wanted to talk to us about.
Great. Thank you, Dan. My name is Magnus Conte, and I'm a community health worker. I work as a community health education provider with Last Mile Health as an executive director for the Community Health Academy. But I get paid to do my work, even though my work is focused on community health, improving the quality of education. But some of our community health workers, and most of them, I have to say, do not get paid. I don't think it's fair. So I think I wanted to open this discussion by just highlighting that sort of inequity within the health services. But more particularly, I would like to talk about the Community Health Academy, which is an initiative introduced by Last Mile Health, but truly intended to be a multi-stakeholder collaborative, bringing together the global community that are involved in education and building the capacity of the health workforce, not just community health workers, but also Ministry of Health officials. You will agree with me, I hope, that there is a crisis in the quality of care that is provided globally. But particularly in this era where we are looking at addressing the need to increase access to healthcare and ensuring that we sort of achieve universal health coverage. This quality of care crisis is known worldwide. We know that 8.9 million unavoidable deaths happen, even though the Lancet series over the last number of years in various areas in maternal and child health, in nutrition, have indicated that there are cost-effective, affordable, easy-to-deliver services, but nonetheless, these services are not easily available because we do not have adequate workforce or workforce that is sufficiently trained to deliver healthcare at the community level. And it is projected that there will be a gap of 18 million health workers by 2030. So what are we doing about this? The Community Health Academy has been set up to leverage digital technology to deliver education to the most remote communities for community health workers on the one hand, and using online education to build the capacity of health systems leaders and the supervisors of community health workers as they supervise community health workers, but also develop strategies, policies, and design, manage, and implement community health work programs at national scale. So that's the focus of the Community Health Academy. We know we're not going to be able to do this by ourselves, so we are forming coalitions and building a network of global experts in our various hubs that we are going to set in Africa and Asia and subsequently in the Americas, with the intention of bringing global expertise to the work that we are doing. Within this audience, we have a number of members of our global network of faculty members that are supporting the Community Health Academy already. Subsequently, when we set up our hubs in East and West Africa, we will also be creating a network of regional experts, both from the health sector as well as from the private sector and from academia, to support the work that we do globally, to ensure that the programs that we develop reflect the regional context, the regional perspective, so that we're not sitting in Boston, where I'm based, and developing programs for African countries. We are not sitting there dictating the content or how these programs should be delivered, but rather we are building this coalition of experts, global experts, to be able to reflect the sort of evidence-based knowledge that is there globally, but also harnessing the regional expertise and regional context that exist in these countries to inform the programs that we are delivering, or we are developing and subsequently delivering. So currently, we are partnering with Harvard University, HarvardX, and the edX platform to develop our first Health Systems Leaders Program, which will be delivered on the edX platform. We are very close to the end of our production. This program will be advertised shortly, and hopefully early 2019, health systems leaders, and including yourselves who are here, will be able to register on that course. So if you are interested, you'll be able to give us your details on our communityhealthacademy.org website, where you can leave your details so that as soon as the program is launched, we'll be able to inform you of the launch of those programs. We are also working with the Ministry of Health in Liberia, and thank you very much to the Minister of Health for Liberia, who is here in the audience, for giving us permission to start work in the digitization of the national curriculum of Liberia for community health workers. And this is how we intend to work with governments, so that we can use existing curriculum, review and revise it and bring it up to date, and digitize that content to provide multimedia education on the mobile phones that community health workers already have in the field. And some of you would ask, well, there is no connectivity. There is technology now which allows you to download content on a device, and that device can be taken to the field, and it would broadcast the content to community health workers. And there, in so doing, they'll be able to access the content. Thank you.
That's really exciting. What can I get with those little red boxes?
You can get it on the website.
thank you so much. And Alasford, please.
Okay, thank you. So I want to take this time to say thanks to my boss, Dr. Wilhelmina Jara, Minister of Health, Republic of Liberia, for giving me the opportunity to speak to you about the National Community Health Assistance Program of Liberia, which I serve as the director. It's important for us to know that as policymaker and government, leadership and decision-making is very important to drive change when it comes to policy making and to improve especially access to quality health care. This became evident with the Liberia National Community Health Assistance Program after the crisis of the Ebola. Because of the best practices we learned from the community level, we were able to curb the disease in the shortest possible time. And so we use that model along with our partners to develop a national strategy that we refer to as the National Community Health Assistance Program. This program helps to train community members. We work with the community. They select their own people from their own community. We train them for a length of period of time on an average of 50 days. And they are equipped and deployed in their own community to serve their community. This is very important because if we are to improve the quality of care of the community, then they need people that they trust from their own community to work with them, taking quality health services to their doorsteps. And that is what this Community Health Assistance Program in Liberia is about. What we have done, we have been able to employ three characteristics that define the entire program. One, just as Magnus said, we agree that it was not good or unthinkable to have community members working and they are not getting paid. That serves as a demotivation for them, and it does not produce any tangible results. So the government of Liberia agreed to provide some amount of payment to the community health assistants for the work they are doing. And this, we have seen because of this strategy, it have improved their efficiency at the community level. It have improved their motivation. It serve as an empowerment for them in their community. As we speak, the National Community Health Assistance Program, we have recruited, deployed around above 3,000 community health assistants and over 300 supervisors. Now, the second aspect of the community health assistance program is supervision. Now, supervision is very important because these community health assistants in their community are not highly professional health workers. So they need constant mentoring and supervision from trained professional health workers that we refer to as community health assistants, community health services supervisor, rather. These supervisors pay regular visits in their community, mentoring and supervising these community health assistants. So it is a policy that they are to spend 80% of their time in their community mentoring and supervising these CHAs, for short. And because of this method, we see that the CHAs, they have improved in the quality of their treatment at the community level. We have seen there's a reduction in the cases coming from the community to the health facility. We have seen an increase in facility-based delivery in Liberia. So we have worked with our various partners, Last Mile Health, UNICEF, Partners in Health, IRC, and all of those who are supporting us in Liberia to ensure that we be able to supervise these CHAs such that they don't miss the track from where we want them to be. So whenever they notice and identify a case that is beyond their scope, they are to immediately refer. So they are not only doing integrated management of malaria, ARI, and diarrhea, they are also doing surveillance, community-based surveillance, and reporting these cases. They are doing health promotion and health education. They are doing, on an annual basis, they do household registration, and that helps with us in our data because we need this information so that we'll be able to plan. As we speak, we have not been able to do census as a government, and so the information from these community health assistants, since they live within their community, we use those data for decision making. The other thing I want to highlight here is the issue of ensuring that the community health worker have a standardized tools. We have developed this tool such that quite across the 15 counties, every community health assistant or community health services supervisor go through the same intensive training. 4 modules. Module 1 deals with household registration and vital statistics. Module 2 deals with maternal and child health. Module 3 deals with integrated community case management. And module 4 deals with special cases, as we refer to it, HIV, TB, and other NCDs cases. So all of them go through the same rigorous training, and the curriculum is standardized. All of our partners work with us with this same tool. No partner in the country is doing different thing, because the government is very much working closely with all of our partners to ensure that that coordination remains the same. So the Liberian National Community Health Assistance Program was, as I mentioned previously, was developed as a result of the Ebola crisis. And as a close, because of the close working relationship we have with our partners, we have been able to achieve a lot over the last few years since the inception of the program. Up to date, there have been 8,000 1,000 home visits that have been conducted by the CHS. There have been about 200,000 childhood illnesses that have been treated by the CHS, including pneumonia, malaria, and diarrhea. There have been over 50,000 pregnant women that have been referred to the health facility for ANC visit as well as delivery. There have been over 2,000 cases that have the potential of causing public health concern that have been detected by the CHS in the community and reported timely. So there are a lot of good things that we have been able to accomplish over the last few years because of this program. And we as a country, we can only be proud of what we have done. And we want you to also learn from Liberia and do the same in your country. It's less costly and it's effective. It helps you take healthcare to the doorstep of the community members. And so as a government, we look forward to working closely with our partners in the next few years to redesign the tool. Because every day we are learning new things, we are faced with some challenges, and so we are learning new things. We want to redesign the tool such that we'll be able to improve on the tool and be able to scale it out to all of the counties and, if possible, other countries. So with much ado, I want to say thank you for giving us the opportunity for explaining what is it like in Liberia when it comes to our community health assistance program. Thank you.
It's really, you know, one of the big challenges with community health worker events is that usually the voice of the community health workers themselves is not represented. I've been to too many conferences where there's a lot of doctors talking about community health workers. Right now, this is a unique opportunity to hear directly from a highly valued community health worker, Ruth.
First, I want to appreciate my boss, CSKD, and all of us for recognizing my presence. My name is Rufta Tula. I'm from Rosas County in Liberia. I am a community health worker. I live in a far off community, but not my community alone. In Liberia, there are many far off communities that does not have access to health. For this reason, women and children travel many hours on foot to get to the health facility. Women and children also die from preventable diseases. But the good news, the community health worker can fill up this gap between the community and the health facility. I saw this before becoming a community health worker. Women were not using family planning. They thought family planning could kill them and stop them from having children in the future. As small as my community is, there used to be 6 to 7 BBLs every year. Their moms and baby were not healthy, and the baby was dying because their women were not practicing child spacing. As a community health worker, I changed this. By using my job aid, this is the job aid, and the knowledge I learned from their training, I bring their women together and educate them about family planning. The women trust me because I was trained and live with them in the community. And also by using my job aid, the women believe that I am bringing the truth to them. I work with my clinical supervisor to refer women to the health facility for family planning services. Now, there are many women that are using family planning as compared to the past, where there used to be 6 to 7 BBLs every year. We now have 1 and 2 BBLs every year. Even my traditional male wife, she is always joking with me, telling me that I'm taking a role of work. But I always tell her that it is good. We have less BBLs, but more healthy children. I'm not the only one doing this work in Liberia. The Ministry of Health created the National Community Health worker program to train over 4,000 community health workers and 400 clinical supervisors to provide primary health services in the county. We are not only providing family planning services. We treat malaria, pneumonia, and diarrhea in children. We refer be better to the health facility for delivering. We refer children for vaccination, etc. The Ministry of Health recognizes the importance of my work. They make sure I am trained, supplied, supervised, and paid. Because I am paid, I feel proud. My family and community see the importance of my work. I am saving money to support my daughter's education and also mine. I have a dream that one day I will finish my high school education and become a professional nurse. Because I have a passion of this work. I also have a dream for Liberia. The Ministry of Health will work with partners and continue supporting this program so that all Liberians will have access to health. Besides, I have a dream that all of you will take this work to your own country together with World Health Organization, donors, government, and partners. We will extend the community and primary health care to all the people so that there can be a justice in health for all.
Thank you.
That's a wonderful call to get to as many countries as possible with this incredible work that we're hearing about. Diana offers opportunity to understand what this has looked like across multiple different countries. Thank you, Diana.
Thank you very much. After Ruth really speaking, reminding me how community health workers have been very instrumental in my own life. I felt it worth standing, sort of share my thoughts, picking on from where Ruth has taken it from. In 1983, in a small village in Uganda, a woman labored and had obstructed labor for a girl standing in front of you. And so it was because of amazing women in the community that perhaps did not have the name of community health workers that supported my mother to go through all the delays, the delay at home, the delay on the way, and the delay in the health facility to be able to give birth to me. And so because of the work that Ruth and several other community health workers continue to do, I am able to be in this audience today. I'd love to acknowledge that that which my mother went through shaped my career path and has seen me see a number of countries navigate the community health worker space, particularly in ensuring that they work towards universal health coverage. I'd love to acknowledge that in Ethiopia, the government has championed community health through their health development army. The Ethiopian Federal Ministry of Health has been at the forefront through developing the National Health Sector Development Plan to develop a full-fledged program around Ethiopia on community health workers. Malawi, in its own right, has also been able to develop a national community health strategy 2017-2022. Allow me to speak to countries that are very close to my heart, and that is the country where I come from, Uganda, but also Kenya. In Uganda, as Living Goods, we're very proud to be partnering with Last Mile Health. And what are we doing? We are really aligning with the government of Uganda. In our work every day, we continue to share our 10 years of experience in implementation to support government in form of technical assistance. I'd love to speak to a few examples through which we're enabling that. The government of Uganda has put in place a community health extension worker program. These are slightly higher than the normal village health teams. And so Living Goods has come in as a strong partner to provide technical assistance around what does performance management look like. You're all very aware that it's one thing to train community health workers, but it's another to ensure that they deliver. What are we doing to enable that or to make that possible? Living Goods is supporting the Ministry of Health in developing supervision guidelines for the community health workers to report to the health facility in charges. But beyond that, we're also taking a leg lower to ensure that the children are able to have supervision guidelines to the community health workers done. Beyond that, recently when our minister wanted to table the CHU policy for approval, Cabinet requested her to present a regulatory impact assessment. This is an assessment that shows the cost-benefit analysis. My minister, who is on the way to Astana, just then realized that that was something that was important if the CHU policy was to be approved. And so immediately, Living Goods has provided the support to make sure that the CHU policy gets the regulatory impact assessment done, and then it can be able to be approved. That spells to one major thing, that partners have to support MOH, or Ministry of Health, but Ministry of Health taking the lead. I'd love also to speak to other ways that we continue to enable the Ministry of Health to achieve their perspectives or their goals, but really us taking, supporting them and them taking the lead. And one way that we do that is in ensuring that we share our perspectives on a minimum viable opportunity. You're all very aware that for community health workers to thrive and for them to be able to excel, there are a number of things that must be in place. One, you might want to consider them being tech-enabled, which will enable them to get things done, have reminders on when they are supposed to visit a mother or to support a mother to go for ANC. But also beyond that, performance management was spoken to, having essential medicines, financing, but also having the question of scaling and impact in place. One key thing that we've also been looking at that has been very critical is the question of investment. Those of us that were in the session in the morning where Angela of Health Financing Alliance really spoke to a number of tiers of financing that are very critical. You all noticed that the total annual budget for community health for sub-Saharan Africa is about $3.3 billion. However, only $1.1 billion is available. That leaves a gap of $2 billion needed for community health implementation in sub-Saharan Africa. With this, we need to create investment cases which can be used as advocacy tools for country governments to continue prioritizing community health. At Living Goods, we have had the opportunity to work with the Kenya government to develop their first ever investment case for community health. What does that mean? It simply means that the government of Kenya has had that tool that can support it to make strong cases on why invest in community health. In my own country, Uganda, Living Goods is supporting the development of a community health strategy, alongside which we will work and finalize the investment case for community health in my country. But beyond that, I'd love to speak to two critical things that we continue to rally and support the ministry on. Our country governments have funding, but prioritizing community health continues to be a gap. And so in our work, we continue to advocate to the government of Uganda. Through our advocacy efforts in 2018-19, they were able to create a budget line for community health at the national level. And then they created a vote for that of 3 billion Uganda shillings for community health in Uganda. That is the first ever win for community health in my country. Because before then, thank you very much. Because before then, community health was hidden in the many things happening, but now it has come out as a budget line. Living Goods is now moving a notch higher to go to the sub-national level to advocate for budget lines for community health. What does that mean? It simply means that community health will be able to cascade down. It will not be only in the hands of the donors, but beyond that, to ensure sustainability, we're holding our governments accountable to community health. I'd love to end my few remarks by mentioning a key quote that my CEO keeps on saying, my CEO Liz German, who is seated right behind the first line. Liz, if you can stand up for recognition. And she usually says that the power to create health is in the community. And so we need to prioritize community health. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And you know, I don't know if anyone has any immediate questions straight out and start the process. So one really important point that you described was that there is this interface between community demand and the development of these programs. One of the things that we've heard here is throughout this pre-session before the primary healthcare conference is that financing is going to be important. And that financing is going to come from a different mix of international donor money, domestic money, private sector, and otherwise. But it's not a passive process. We can be active participants in starting to drum up that demand and trying to get more people engaged in that. And in this, the fascinating thing is that community health worker programs are interfacing with the community. So I was just wondering if maybe from the Liberian experience, if Hollisford, Magnus, or Ruth, if you could talk to us a little bit about how that process has played out in the Liberian context.
Okay, so please repeat the question, please.
Sure. The question is, when it comes to financing the Liberian national program, how has community engagement influenced how much goes to community health, how much is allocated for community health versus other programs? And you know, to give it a slightly different spin, you know, we heard today that because of the political cycle, politicians often will buy an MRI machine and then have a big event around it, you know, put a big bow cutting ceremony. And the point was, can you have community health workers with a bow on them parade around the city, right? So what's the equivalent for a community health worker program that might take beyond the political cycle to actually get the return on investment? How does that process, what are your thoughts about that in the Liberian context?
So I think this is a very important aspect as a government. Currently, as we speak, the government is paying salaries and incentives for supervisors that are involved with the community health programs in all of the counties and at the national level. The Minister of Health, Honorable Dr. Wilhelmina Jana, she is very much committed to this process. And as a division, what we intend to do is to engage national stakeholders by next year. We are planning a national community health conference that will bring together all of the national stakeholders. And we want, the intention is to showcase what we have achieved, what we are doing now, and what we intend to go, such that it will drive them to be able to see the need to make allocations for the community health program. The Ministry of Health budget is not that large. So for this reason, there are some priorities that have been given. The program is heavily donor-driven. Notwithstanding, the government and the ministry is doing its best to be able to pay the salaries and incentives for supervisors at the national and the county's level. So I believe that this is a very good initiative. We need to take it as a division and as a ministry to engage the national stakeholders, which I do believe, and I'm very confident that they will see the need to support the community health program.
Magnus. Let me just add a couple of points here, which is that the issue of the political cycle is not just in Liberia, it's a global phenomenon, and what we find is that it is usually the civil servants and the technocrats within ministries of health that stay on longer to continue the work that has been done, both in terms of capacity building for policy development, for strategy development and costing of those strategies, and then managing these national scale programs. If donors and implementing partners, NGOs, help to institutionalize this approach of developing national scale programs, the possibility of this continuing becomes stronger. And even when you have a change in government, you have a change in the ministerial appointments, that the chances of having continuity of those programs or those strategies is much stronger as a result of that. So that it is not an issue of which government is there, but rather to what extent are these approaches institutionalized. One final point is that we also need to build the evidence base that will justify the need to continue to invest in these programs. If we build the capacity of community health workers to deliver high-quality programs, we build the capacity of their supervisors to deliver high-quality programs, you build the justification and the evidence to show to subsequent administrations that there is an investment case here to be made. We had the Minister of Health for Kazakhstan this morning. He gave the example of the digitization of the health services. And that investment resulted, I think it was something like 21% savings for this year in terms of the budget of the Ministry of Health. So equally, if we invest in community health work programs, build the capacity to deliver high-quality programs, we are likely to build the evidence and the case, the business case, to continue to implement these programs and invest in them.
There's great wisdom in that, this idea of quality as sustainability, not just a good unto itself, but actually a tactic for long-term sustainability. We have another question here from the audience, please.
Hello. Thank you for the presentations. My first question is, obviously, as we are listening to you, we want to buy into what you're saying. And when you go back to our communities or to our countries, we don't want to reinvent the wheel. What has not worked? That's the first question that I have for you. Because I don't want to go and repeat what you went through. The second question is, more often when we talk about communities, we talk about them as if they have all the time at their hands. And the question is, how do you interest communities to be available? Because we have to integrate these into with their livelihoods. You don't have them all the time. That's the second question, the third and the last one. We are now talking determinants of health, social determinants of health. And throughout the morning, we've been talking about health, 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 health. And my question is, your community health workers, what is their relationship with other sectors of the economy in terms of what they are doing? Thank you.
So whoever wants to tackle one of those questions, if any of them spoke to you.
I would like to start with the first question about what has not worked. In my experience, working with another organization before I joined Last Mile Health, I was responsible for managing a 5-country maternal and child health program across East and West Africa. What we found was that as an NGO, you could go and work at the local level, at the community level, and build community health work programs or support ministries of health at that level to build community health work programs. But if at a national level, there isn't a strong national policy or a strong strategy or a costed implementation plan that ensures that there is a long-term sustainability of a national scale program, you might be successful in a small community, in a small district or county, but to take that to national scale becomes a problem because the enabling environment does not exist at national level to support the scaling up of very good practices that you may have developed within a small community. Take the case of Liberia. Last Mile Health started working in a couple of counties, started to build a successful community health work program, but deliberately engaged with the national government to create that enabling environment at the policy level to ensure that what is being learned within a couple of counties can be taken to national scale. And that's what's happening now successfully. But I have seen other countries where the enabling environment did not exist, and therefore the programs were successful in small areas, but they were not scalable. The point I'm trying to make here is that I think both donors and NGOs, implementing partners, need to invest more in building the capacity at the national level, the enabling environment that will ensure that projects that we implement at a county, district level can actually be taken to scale and be sustainable because you have created the enabling environment. And that's one of the reasons why the Community Health Academy is bringing case studies from other countries, from Ethiopia, from Bangladesh, and hopefully from Brazil, to inform the health systems leadership program that we are developing for health system leaders, to take lessons from other countries, things that have worked, things that have not worked, to inform the design and development of national scale community health workers programs to create that environment, that enabling environment that I just referred to. I will allow other members to answer the other questions.
So the other question has to do with how we get involved with the community, yes? How do we? So now, the program is structured such that the community should have a say, not only in a recruitment process, but in a supervision and monitoring process of the CHAs. We have a community health system in Liberia. At the community level, we have the community health committee. We have the health facility development committee. The community health committee will do the selection of the CHA, and then the recruitment, along with the county health teams, the recruitment is done. But interestingly, the county health teams or the government of Liberia cannot successfully implement the community health assistance program without the community, because at a national level, we only make policies. At the community level, it is the implementation. The communities are responsible for implementation. So they are charged with the responsibility to ensure that these ones are hired, trained, and deployed within their own community. So we work very closely with them so that they see the community health program as their own, not as a government program. And so this helps them to be able to take leadership in the community and be able to checkmate any CHA if he or she is going wrong. The second aspect is it also helps the individual CHAs in the community. The fact that the CHA is being paid, he or she will spend much time with the program, visiting his community, his or her community, providing the services. The community also is charged with the responsibility to help that CHA with other work. For example, if the CHA in his community or her community wants to do a little gardening or farming, the community CA has the responsibility to assist that CHA in his community to be able to do that farming. That also serves to improve the financial potency of the CHA as well as the community, because they all benefit from that interchange of activity.
Wonderful. Great wisdom from the panel. I would also say that for anyone worried about creating great programs, we can only cover so much in a small panel, but there's also pooled wisdom. The WHO tomorrow is coming out with a set of guidelines. All the NGOs represented on this panel have also come together to create a group called Community Health Impact Coalition, and on chwimpact.org, you can find a set of implementer expertise support, amongst other groups who have produced guidelines or models to follow. Now, so for the sake of time, we're coming to the very end. Is there any final burning questions? Yes.
Okay, I'm Dr. Wilbina Jalo, the Minister of Health for Liberia. I would like to thank the panelists for a job well done. I just want to say that as you go to form your own community health assistance program in your individual countries, you must also consider that each country has its unique problems or issues that guide their program. For example, Liberia has issues with road networks, so most of the community health assistance program takes care of the community which is 5 kilometers or more away from the nearest health facility. So they have a unique duties to take care of at their level. And now, in order for it to become a program that will go get on the budget of the health budget, you will have to make it into a team approach. You have to look at it as a team, community health worker, community health assistance, or a nurse, or PA, or midwife. They have to be a part of a team. Then you can put it on your budget to be able to support them. Right now, Liberia, almost 60% of its budget is donor or dependent. The rest of the budget is used for payroll to pay all of the other cartridges. And there are so many competing things right now in the government system. So most of the community health system are being supported by our different partners, including the World Bank, and keeping the program going as we look for a sustainable way to continue the program as the donors or the partner dependency become less. So we hope that we all will, with the partners, work together to find the way forward that we can continue this program as, you know, the conditions in the country improve. There's so many competing issues right now. There's no light, roads, or education system. So the government is fighting to rebuild all of these systems. So now this cartridge is really helping to take care of the people at the last mile so that the health care can reach to them as we figure out a way to improve the primary healthcare system so that when they refer, there's something for them or facility for them to refer to. So you have to design your program based on the issues in your country so that it can be successful. Thank you.
And thank you so much for underscoring that fact that a community health system is only as good as the larger health system supporting them. That's a critically important piece of wisdom, and thank you so much. And final word.
Thanks, Dan. Jim Campbell from WHO. Minister, panelists, thank you very much. Really enjoyed all the presentations. Just a couple of points, if I may. You mentioned the guideline. Here it is. Hard copies. On Friday when it's launched as part of the Astana conference. I'd just like to acknowledge that over 100 people participated to talk about expertise. WHO's role is about convening. Over 100 people participated in bringing this evidence together from many of the organizations represented here, Raj and Ari on the expert review group as well. And I want to link that to a couple of points. Dan, the issue about voice. And excellent to see Ruth here, and earlier to see Maria speaking in the earlier session, also a community health worker from a high-income country. Voice is absolutely critical, and if we're talking about community health systems, community health workers, we have to have them in our conversations. I'd like to acknowledge the work of the Frontline Health Worker Coalition that have been investing in health workers to be able to participate in the global events, the global health architecture, and recite their stories, because that's what we're all here to support and work for. They're the ones that are making the difference on a day-to-day basis, and we have to understand. And the voice of community health workers is part of one of the discussions in the guideline. But I want to come back to your story, Ruth, and your dreams, if I may. You put a dream about the opportunity for career development and career pathway. Your dream in terms of your income, to respect that you are a health worker and you deserve to be paid for your contribution to the community, gives you the other part of your dream for continuing education for you, your family, and others. Again, these elements are in the guideline. And that's the collective evidence that's available. It's the collective experience, the collective wisdom facilitated through a WHO process. But thank you all. and we look forward to seeing you on Friday. Come and celebrate.
Thank you so much. We've had this incredible opportunity to go throughout the entire spectrum of people involved in this community health space. Let's actually give the final word to Ruth. Ruth, what do you need? What do you want us to know so that you can do the miracles that you're setting out to do?
The World Health Organization, the way we fund us, donors, and others to continue supporting this program so that the world will have access to health, such as the support we are receiving from them. The drugs, we need it on time. The support we are receiving from them, when we get it on time, the community member, they build trust in us. So these are the things that we need from the World Health Organization.
It's a beautiful reminder about the importance of creating proper systems, because people at the front lines need it the most, and the patients that they serve. And so with that, I hope that adds some energy to your footsteps. Thank you so much for everyone for participating, and you can hear this again on CHWCentral.org.